This is the WGN Radio Theater with Carl Amari.
Dragnet.
The Jack Benny Program.
I'm that man. Matt Dillon, United States Marshal.
Yes, it's Maxwell House Coffee Time, starring George Burns and Gracie Allen.
Good evening, friends of the Inner Sanctum.
We offer you Escape.
It's time once again for another comedy episode of Our Miss Brooks.
Suspense.
Countdown for blast-off. X minus one.
Richard Diamond, private detective.
The Johnson Wax Program with Fibber McGee and Molly.
Kraft presents The Great Gildersleeve.
Yeah.
Well, it's about 7 minutes after 11 p.m. here on Saturday, February 27th, 2016. Program 55 of the WGN Radio Theater. I'm your host, Carl Amari. My co-host is sitting next to me, looking beautiful, Lisa.
Why, thank you, Carl Amari.
Too bad this isn't television. Well,
right. Kind
of is. You can see us on WGNradio.com, right?
I'm really feeling good about the fact that it's radio.
Luckily, you're wearing clothes. Because we can be seen.
Yes, I am
so
wearing
clothes.
So
for once, she's wearing clothes.
I know. I usually don't wear clothes, but tonight I decided it was a good
idea. It's good to see you.
Thank you. You too.
Mrs.
It's been a
Wolf.
Couple of hours.
Very nice. No E at the end of Wolf.
Like Nero.
And we are going to be here till 2 o'clock in the morning on Saturday, and it'll be Sunday morning, of course. And then we're back here again about 20-something hours later.
I feel like we should just stay and sleep in the green
room.
Yeah,
we probably should. It's be a lot less driving, that's for sure.
Yeah.
We're here Saturday and Sunday nights from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. playing the best in classic radio. And tonight into tomorrow morning till 2 a.m. we'll have The Whistler, and then it's Rogues Gallery with Dick Powell, good detective, and then My Friend Irma, great comedy with Marie Wilson. It's all brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
Dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum-dum. Celebrity School, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
In the upcoming comedy Ghostbusters, an all-female reboot of the Ghostbusters franchise, this actress stars as Erin Gilbert, an author on the subject of the paranormal.
All right, so what can people win?
They will win a $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's very best deep.
All right,
pizza.
If you know who this celebrity is Lisa's talking about, call us 312-981-7200, win a $25 gift card for Lou Malnati's. Now, here's a hint. Here she is talking to an airline steward in 2011's Bridesmaids.
Coach, passengers are not allowed up here in first class. It's policy. I'm sorry.
Oh, this is a very strict plane that I'm on. Welcome to Germany.
All right, give us a call, 312-981-7200. Name that celebrity. We'll find our winner after this break.
This is show 55 of the WGN Radio Theater, and we are playing Celebrity Scoop, and we will hear that movie clip one more time, one of Carl's favorites.
Coach, passengers are not allowed up here in first class. It's policy. I'm sorry.
Oh, this is a very strict plane that I'm on. Welcome to Germany.
And we have Mike on the line from Chicago. Hey, Mike.
Hey, how are you?
I'm great. How are you?
Doing well, thanks.
Great. Who is that actress?
Kristen Wiig.
You are right. Are you a big fan of Kristen Wiig?
I am. Yeah, I think she's great.
Yeah, I think everybody loves Kristen. You are a winner, Mike. You've won a Lou Malnati's gift certificate for $25, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza, my favorite pizza, and you can find one of their 40 Chicagoland locations. Order online at loumalnati's.com. Hey, Mike, thanks so much for listening and for calling in.
Oh, thank you. That's great.
Take care.
Thanks, Mike. Lisa loves saying certificate because it has four syllables as opposed to gift card.
It gives me more to say.
Yeah,
so
she likes to hear her own voice, and
yeah,
that's okay because you're on the radio, so that's good, right?
Certificate.
Yeah. You know what? After we start this episode of The Whistler, we're going to invite a special guest in, Jen Duffy. She is the founder of Mee's Meals. We're going to tell you all about Mee's Meals, but if you want to check out their website before we have Jen on, just go to Mee's, and it's spelled M-E-E-Z Meals.
And we're going to find out why it's called Mee's Meals as well.
We're going to tell you all about it. Very interesting way to have dinner brought to your home. Very cool. I think you're going to really enjoy meeting Jen Duffy. All right, it's time for The Whistler, Lisa Wolf. You like the mystery shows.
I
know
do.
That. The Whistler premiered in 1942, was sponsored by Signal Oil. I don't think there's any Signal Oil companies around anymore.
Yeah.
Nah. And This was really cool because Bill Foreman was the longest whistler, and he was an all-knowing character who narrated a person's criminal acts, and the criminal's fate would be ultimately undone by some twist of fate in the show at the end, you'll hear. And the best supporting actors were on this: Jack Webb, Gerald Moore, Elliot Lewis, William Conrad. Nearly 700 episodes over the run. And it lasted till 1955, made a brief transition to TV in 1954, and there were 8 Columbia pictures of The Whistler from 1944 to 1948. But we have a radio episode for you now. This is going back to September 3rd, 1944. It's called Practically Foolproof. Stars Bill Foreman as The Whistler, and in the supporting cast, Jane Morgan and Walter Tetley. Walter Tetley played Leroy on The Great Gildersleeve. I think you're going to enjoy this. Sponsored by Signal Oil, is heard on CBS. Here's part one of The Whistler.
The Whistler, another Signal mystery.
I am the Whistler. And I know many things, for I walk by night. I know many strange tales, many secrets hidden in the hearts of men and women who have stepped into the shadows. Yes, I know the nameless terrors of which they dare not speak.
Tonight, the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal's famous Go Farther gasoline and motor oil, bring you another in a series of strange tales by The Whistler. The story of a strange and desperate crime, a crime so carefully planned it was practically foolproof. And now, The Whistler.
Edward Bowman and Marco Lorenz are the proprietors of a popular little lending library in a quiet residential section of town. They cater to a highly respectable clientele, a clientele who might be surprised to overhear their breakfast table conversation this morning as they sit in the back of their shop, huddled over a crudely drawn diagram. The smoke from their cigarettes curls upward to hang like a cloud in the stream of morning sunlight. Suddenly, Marco, with a gesture of disgust, pushes the diagram aside.
The whole thing is impossible, Eddie. They got the place locked up tighter than a drum.
I thought you was the guy who never gave up. Mm. Here's $100,000 in negotiable bonds, and you want to kiss it goodbye. Listen, Marco, look at this diagram. Mm. Now, look, here's the vault where they keep the bonds. Now, it's 5 yards from there to the door. Here is where we can cut the wires on the alarm system. See? Once we get inside, the job's a pushover.
Sure, it's a pushover if we can get inside. It ought to be. We spend 3 months casing the joint. But how do we get in? You couldn't blast through that door, and as for the windows, then I suppose you're going to shrink yourself down and crawl between the bars.
Well, what's wrong with using a hacksaw?
I already told you, it takes too long. It's too risky.
They've only got 2 bars in each window. If we could get 1 bar out, I might be able to squeeze through.
What we need is a 9-year-old kid, a small 9-year-old.
Yeah, one with a criminal record preferred. Hey, are you still planning to fence this stuff with Jake?
Yeah, right after we pull the job. I'm not taking any chances. Jake will give us $50,000 for the bonds, and then we're sitting pretty. No hot money, no stolen goods. Yes, we'll be sitting pretty.
If we could only dream up a way to crack that office.
Now tell me, we got a customer this end.
I'll go. Oh, good morning, Mrs. Miles.
Good morning, Mr. Bowman. I brought someone in to meet you. This is Mr. Johnson.
Well, how do you do?
Put it there, Bowman. And the name is Shorty. Shorty Johnson. Known to millions as the small change kid with a $1 million personality.
Well, just call me Eddie.
Shorty is my new tenant.
Your new tenant?
Yes, he just came in from the East. He plans to go to work in the aircraft industry. Fuses, you know.
Fuselage, ma'am, fuselage. Yes, sir, Eddie, I walked out on a great theatrical career to come out to the West Coast and serve my country. A great career.
You're an actor?
Acrobat, my boy, acrobat. Played the palace for 8 weeks. Tumbling Tom Thumb, the world's mightiest mite. That's how they build me. But from now on, I'm taking my cues from Uncle Sam. Yes, sirree. Well, now then, what have you got in the way of a rootin', tootin', hair-raising yarn?
Well, I've got
That was the first thing Shorty asked about when he moved in, Mr. Bowman, where he could get books. I think you're going to have a very steady customer on your hands.
That's right, Eddie. I'm a sucker for exciting literature. Mysteries, westerns, spicy stories, anything.
Yeah, well, we got a new mystery called Another Man's Poison. It's a bestseller.
Nah, I'm tired of poison. Haven't you got something with a lot of gunplay in it? You know, an old-fashioned gangster story with lots of shooting?
Yeah, well, let's see now.
Hey, what's keeping you, Eddie? Oh, sorry, Mrs. Miles, I didn't see.
Oh, hello, Mr. Lorraine.
Marco, this is Mr. Johnson, Shorty Johnson.
Huh?
What are you staring at, brother? Haven't you ever seen a midget before?
Oh, sure. I mean, how are you?
Shorty just came in from the East. He's renting a room over at Mrs. Miles.
Oh, I see.
Yes, Shorty's quite a bookworm. That's why I brought him over this morning. I told him you boys had the best rental library in town.
Well, I hope he's as good a customer as you are, Mrs. Miles.
Well, I guess we might as well push off, ma'am. Nice meeting you boys. I'll see you around.
Yeah, you bet.
Sure.
Goodbye, Mr. Bowman. Mr. Lorraine.
Goodbye.
Goodbye.
Now I've seen everything. The richest dame in town takes in a roomer.
Oh, why not? She's got plenty of room to spare.
Yeah, I guess so. Friendly little guy, wasn't he?
Oh, Shorty? Yeah, kind of a character. How big would you say he is?
Huh? Oh, about 4 feet tall, 75 pounds. Why?
Just the right size. Sure, just right.
What are you talking about?
Oh, nothing. Just an idea I had.
Now, what could Marco be thinking? Could it be how very fortunate it is? Just when they need a very small man to complete their plans, a midget walks in? But what kind of man is Shorty the Midget? The kind who would listen to a business proposition? It certainly wouldn't seem so, as Shorty, just a few blocks away, spends a quiet evening at the home of his wealthy benefactor, Mrs. Miles.
Ha! He got him! Right between the eyes, too! Hot dog!
What are you reading now, Shorty?
Temptations of a Gun Mouth. The boys just got it in today.
I suppose this one is a regular humdinger?
A pipperoo, to say the least, ma'am. You'll have to read this one, Mrs. M. Make your blood pressure zoom right up to 300. Yes, sir, just what the doctor ordered.
Shorty, what would my friends think if they caught me reading Temptations of a Gun Moll?
Only trying to improve your education, ma'am. I used to teach school, you know.
My, you've certainly had a checkered career, haven't you?
Checkered is the word for it, ma'am. But no more. From now on, it's a time clock and a pair of overalls.
Oh, then you've heard from the plant?
Yep. I'll start to work any day now. A simple, honest toiler. That's my new role in life.
Well, that's fine.
I guess it's about time I started paying you back for everything I owe you.
Now, Shorty, we agreed not to talk about that. Why, goodness sake, you've been such a help to me. I don't know how I'll get along when you go to work.
On the contrary, Mrs. M., on the contrary. Having you fuss and worry over me makes me feel like, well, like there's someone taking an interest. You know what I mean? After 10 years of traveling around from one circuit to another, living out of trunks, feels pretty good to talk over your problems with someone besides agents and producers.
Oh, you poor boy. It must have been terribly hard for you all those years.
Wasn't easy, ma'am. Especially for a fella like me. Hey, listen here, young lady. Don't you know what time it is? 11:30. Come on now, come on. Off to bed with you.
Oh, not yet.
Oh, yes. Come on now.
Oh, no, but I'm not sleepy.
Now, none of your back talk, miss. Hurry up now. Scat.
Oh, all right, you tyrant. Oh, I guess I'll take that book if you're through with it.
Are you going to pass up Shakespeare tonight?
Well, I think I ought to branch out a little. One can get in a rut with Shakespeare, you know.
One certainly can. Well, good night, ma'am.
Good night, Shorty.
Oh, wait a minute.
Yes?
Aren't you forgetting something? Yeah. picture on the wall. The picket. Oh, the safe.
I don't think that's really necessary, Shorty.
Oh, yes, it is. You want to wake up some morning with your throat cut? Besides, you're liable to poke your eye out in your sleep with one of those rings.
Oh, all right. But it seems so silly. I've never used that safe for anything but old love letters.
Well, from now on, you're keeping your jewels there. You certainly need a man to look after you.
I guess I have one.
Well, you store your little trinkets away.
All right.
I'm going to curl up on the sofa with sagebrush destiny.
All right. Now, let me see. Now, my rings. Bracelet. Brooch. I guess that's all. Oh, my pearls. I almost forgot. There. Well, that's done. I hope you're satisfied. Good night, Shorty. Shorty.
Why, for goodness sake, he's sound asleep.
All right, that's first portion of The Whistler, September 30th, 1944. Practically foolproof. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. I want to welcome our guest, Lisa, Jen Moore, founder of Meez Meals, and it's M-E-E-Z Meals, M-E-E-Z Meals.com, to the program.
Thank
you,
Jen.
Hey, welcome. So tell us about Meez Meals. Why should our listeners go to your website and check this out? This is very unique, really interesting. I had it all week, Meez Meals. It was amazing.
Great. Well, what we are is we deliver the ingredients for dinners prepped and ready to cook. So all the onions are diced, the carrots are taken care of. So when it's time to cook, you just need to do the cooking. Clean up is a snap. It's an easy way to have a home-cooked meal.
And this is local, right? You've got kitchens right here in the area, Evanston, is it?
We do, absolutely. So your food is coming straight from our kitchen to your home. It's not getting on an airplane. It's not sitting in a warehouse.
And how does it get to our home?
We have delivery drivers who bring it right according to your instructions. So you can tell us to bring it to the back door. You don't have to be there to receive it. It's all very easy.
I was really impressed because it comes all packaged. It's all beautifully wrapped. You open it up. Everything was in there. The cheese, the carrots, the squash, the vegetables, the meat, everything.
I'm going to try it next week. Tell us what you tasted this week that you enjoyed.
Well, I made this incredible sandwich that had, so it was a piece of bread and it had cheese and it was squash and what was the other ingredient it had? I'm trying to think now.
Oh, was that the one with the...
Pesto.
Yes, the pesto.
Okay, so that was
cheese.
A sandwich. Then there's like a chicken, a Fontana chicken.
Mm-hmm.
Okay, and so it's just great.
And you made it yourself, Carl.
It's because all the instructions are right there, and I can't cook. I mean, come on. I could barely make cereal in the morning.
This is impressive.
And I was able to make this food for my son and I. It was fabulous. It was so fresh, too. It was great.
Did you make it together? Did he help you out?
No, he didn't help, but
okay,
you know
what?
But this is kind of, you have like sort of a niche because, you know, it's family, you know, families that are, let's say, busy working and they don't want to have to always, you know, order fast foods, right? This is a really nice thing. The food comes to you, you cook it together as a family, and then you eat it together.
Exactly. And that's really what it is allowing people to cook, because most people love the idea of cooking. It's just really hard at the end of a long day. And so we've taken out all the things that get in the way of cooking, like the grocery shopping and the meal planning, but you're still cooking and you see everything that's going into it. The family gathers in the kitchen table and there's just something really special about that.
Yeah, go ahead.
So, sorry, for those who are picky eaters or have particular food requests, do you have different options?
We do. That's one of my favorite things about it is people, you choose your own recipes and you can tell us, I don't like onions, we'll leave the onions out. You can tell us that you don't like blue cheese, we'll give you a less stinky cheese instead. And
right.
So it's really customized because this is home cooking. And
yeah.
So it should be what you would want to put in your meals.
I think our listeners would absolutely love Meez Meals. Check them out, MEEZmeals.com. Jen Moore, thanks for coming on the show. We really appreciate it. And I've loved the food this whole week.
I'm so excited to try it this week. I will let our listeners know next week how it went.
Thanks for having me.
All right, you got it. All right, let's go to break, and then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. Welcome back to WGN Radio Theater. We're here every Saturday night and every Sunday night from 11 p.m. until 2 a.m. That's if Lisa allows me to be here. I'm here with her co-hosting this show. Right, Lisa? You're the boss.
Yeah, it's nice to have you so here, though. I'll let you do a little bit of the work.
I just
want to
make you happy.
I'm happy.
All right, good.
Do I look happy?
Yeah. We play classic radio shows here.
You
That's
sure
what we do.
Do.
We play all your favorites, The Shadow, Jack Benny, The Whistler, Inner Sanctum, Boston Blackie, Gunsmoke, Dragnet. I can go on and on.
And all the shows you guys ask for, that's what we play.
Yeah, we give away fun prizes every hour, and we kind of bicker a little bit.
We
like
do.
The battling Bickersons here, Lisa and I. We've been doing this a long time, right, Lisa?
Yeah, it seems like forever.
You know what? I think we've been doing it too, right?
Too long.
Yeah, too long. And Mike Costello, the executive producer, we have Shane Reardon, the producer in there. So we have a terrific team. And Mike, we have a Facebook and website, right?
We do. We have a Facebook page, WGN Radio Theater, and I just recently posted a picture of Bill Forman, who is the star.
He's the Whistler.
Yes.
All right.
Absolutely. And then we can go to WGNRadioTheater.com.
Yeah, what's there?
That's our website where you can check out a few different pictures, and then you can also make some purchases of some old-time radio.
All right, check it out. Go to Facebook, and when you do, please like us. We want to build our likes, right?
Yeah, and let us know what you'd like to hear. We would love to know.
All right, let's get back to this now. We're in the midst of tuning into The Whistler, September 3rd, 1944. It's called Practically Foolproof. Let's hear the conclusion now of The Whistler.
Yes, the little man is sound asleep. The tight, sharp little face is relaxed now, and the lamplight reveals a network of fine lines around the eyes, a tired droop in the lips. The old lady smiles down at the small, strange figure on the couch, and she turns off the light and quietly leaves the room. But a few blocks away in the back room of the rental library, there is no sleep, no rest. Eddie Bowman and Marco Lorenz sit facing each other across the kitchen table, their eyes narrowed, their voices raised in an excited argument.
You're crazy. You're crazy, Marco. You're off your nut. We can't get away with a thing like that.
What do you mean we can't? I got it all worked out. Shorty's room is in the back of the house, and he's got a separate entrance.
And the old lady sleeps upstairs in the front of the house.
That's right. Drive over there tomorrow night, about midnight, when the old lady's sure to be in bed.
Oh.
She won't hear a thing. We get Shorty first. He'll come easy.
Yeah.
The thing is a cinch, the way I got it planned.
Okay.
Now look. We give Shorty the combination to the vault.
Uh-huh.
Then we push him through the window, and he cracks the vault.
Yeah.
Won't take more than 2 minutes. We get the bonds and take them right over to Jake.
Uh-huh.
$50,000 in cold cash, and the rest is smooth sailing.
Yeah. And what about Shorty?
He won't be any trouble. We got a nice barrel of cement for him. Only for him, it won't even take a barrel.
Hey, no, Marco. Let's not get mixed up in anything like that.
No one can pin a thing on us. We got a perfect alibi.
A perfect alibi for the robbery, yeah. But what about the other?
Okay, what happens when Shorty's missing? Old Lady Miles calls the police. Meanwhile, the police are trying to figure out how the bond firm was robbed. Well, they find out the midget's missing. Naturally, they put two and two together.
And they find out he was a steady customer here, so they come around here and start pumping us.
Sure, but they're not going to be looking for a body. They're going to be looking for an escaped thief. We don't know a thing about it. The setup is beautiful. Absolutely foolproof.
You are listening to The Whistler, another Signal mystery brought to you by your friend, the Signal Oil Company. Marketers of Signal's famous Go Farther gasoline and motor oil.
And so Marco and Eddie, partners in the business of lending books and borrowing other things, have decided to add a third and unwilling partner, but only for a very short time. Tonight is the night, and they've driven out to the home of Mrs. Miles to pick up their intended victim, Shorty the Midget, at his private entrance in the rear of the house.
Shorty. Hey, Shorty.
Funny, there's a light on. Shorty.
Eddie and Mark?
Marco.
Yeah, we just dropped over for a little visit.
Well, it's awfully late. I was just getting ready for bed.
Well, you just stay for a minute.
No, I really...
Hey, what goes on?
What are you packing for?
Well, boys, I guess you got me cornered. I couldn't pass my physical over at the plant. I'm leaving tomorrow morning.
Leave, what?
Yep. I wired my agent. He's got a great part for me in a New York show.
So you're walking out, huh? Going back to the big dump.
Oh, gee, fellas. I don't want you to think I'm a heel, but what else could I do?
Get away from that suitcase.
Marco, please be careful. I've got everything all neatly packed.
I thought you were trying to hide something, you little rat. Trying to get away with one of our books, huh?
Hey, what do you know? Sagebrush Destiny. A brand new one, too.
Oh, please, Marco, I didn't mean anything bad. I just didn't have time to finish it. I was planning to send it back, honest.
Where's the other one? Temptations of a Gun Moth.
Mrs. Miles is reading it. Oh, don't be so, Marco. Here, take the book.
Put that book back in the suitcase.
But I thought...
You heard what he said.
Well, say, what's the idea? Eddie, what...
We mean business, short stuff. Now, come on, snap into it.
Sure, Eddie.
Now close the suitcase.
Okay. Say, what's all this about, fellas? I don't like practical...
Shut up. Okay, Eddie.
Eddie!
You take him to the car. I'll bring the suitcase. All set. Move over, Shorty.
Shut up!
Well, things are working out better than we planned. Yeah, you're leaving town at a very convenient time, Shorty. Very convenient.
What's all this about, fellas? I haven't done anything wrong. I don't like this, Marco. What's Eddie doing with a gun?
Never mind about the gun. Just keep your mouth shut and your eyes open, and you'll be all right.
I don't like this, Marco. Let me out, please.
I said keep your mouth shut.
But... where are we going?
Might as well tell him now, Marco.
Yeah. Ever hear of the J.M. Donahue firm?
Stocks and bonds?
Yeah. That's where we're going right now.
But what for?
For 100 grand in negotiable bonds.
You're crazy, Marco. You can't get away with a thing like that.
Oh, yes, we can. With your help, short guy.
What are you talking about?
The only way to get into the place is through a window. And that's where you come in.
No, I won't do it. You can't make...
You'll do it all right, my friend. You want to keep healthy.
Poor Shorty. Either way, it's not going to be so healthy for him, is it? But he doesn't know that as the car pulls up to the curb at the rear of a small building and the three of them alight. The preliminaries are over quickly. A snip of the pliers and the emergency alarm system is cut. Eddie goes to work on the window. A few twists of Eddie's jimmy and...
there. As easy as slicing a cake.
Okay. Here, Shorty. Combination of the safers on this paper. Can you read it?
Yeah, I guess so.
Okay, now when you get inside, the vault's just a few feet to your right. Go straight there. Open it and get the stack of bonds. Bring them straight back here, understand?
Yeah, I understand, Marco.
And listen, you little runt, no funny business. We can see every move you make. We ain't got these rods for looks, see?
I know.
Okay, come on, Shorty. I'll give you a boost. Give me a hand.
Here.
Okay. All right, grab hold.
That's right.
Attaboy.
You can squeeze through the bar sideways. That's it. In you go now. Okay?
Okay.
All right, get going, and don't waste any time.
Do you think he can crack it, Marco?
He'd better. It's a simple combination. If there's any trouble, we'll know he's stolen.
Hey, he's turning the dial now.
Huh?
Hey, that's right. Four to the left. Yeah. Now right. Two. Then, yeah. Then back. Okay, that should be it. Pull it open.
Did it?
Yeah. Hey, he's getting the bonds now.
I told you it'd be a pushover. Did you fix it with Jake to take the stuff tonight?
Yeah, I told him we'd be there 2:30.
It's
20 after now.
Good. Okay, Shorty, don't bother to close the vault. Just bring the stuff over the window.
Okay. Here it is, you guys.
Look at that lettuce. 100,000 smackers right in my hand. Not bad, huh, pal?
Hey, listen, Marco. Give me a hand. I can't get out of here by myself. Hurry up. I gotta catch a train.
Yeah. Maybe you're gonna catch a train. Okay, here. Get my hand.
Wait a minute. I heard you. What did you mean?
What are you talking about?
What you just said.
Don't waste time. Take my hand.
No. What did you mean? Maybe. maybe I'd catch a train.
He didn't mean nothing, Shorty.
No, I was just kidding, Shorty. Come on, take my hand.
No.
I thought you wanted to get out of there.
No, I see it now. You're going to kill me, so I can't squeal on you. Now I see it.
No, listen, Shorty, no. We'll even cut you on the take, honest. Only just come on down, get out of there.
No, no, now I see it. I'm going to stay here. Stay here and wait for the cops.
Marco, he's running back. He's going to hurt you. Eddie.
What's the matter? I got him. He won't blab to a cop now.
You crazy fool. We had a perfect alibi and you had to butcher.
Yeah, but Marco, I...
Never mind. There's no time to talk now. Let's get out of here.
But Marco, they can't pin anything on us
they
now.
They can't pin anything on the midget, you mean? We'll find his body in there. And then they're going to start looking for the guys who stole the bombs. Only now it won't be just a grand larceny rap, it'll be murder.
I'm sorry, Marco. I must have lost my head. I thought if you got into that vault and hit...
We could have gotten him out some way, given him our guns, given him half the take, something, but now...
Well, what are we going to do?
I don't know, but they got to get another alibi, quick.
Yeah. Hey, how about this? Suppose we just walked into the police station, see, and told them we heard gunshots near there, see? That ought to throw them off our trail.
Yeah, it might work. It's dangerous, but we gotta do something. I guess we better take a chance. Only come on, we gotta get this stuff over to Jake's first and get rid of it.
Pretty risky, isn't it, Marco? 100,000 in bonds missing, and a body lying at the door of the open vault. And you're going to walk into the police station and tell them about it. But... well, it may work. Anyway, you feel better about it now that Jake has the bonds and you have the cash safely put away. And the desk sergeant doesn't seem too interested when you walk in and start to tell him about it.
Where'd you say you heard these shots?
In the vicinity of 4th and Powell Street.
How long ago?
About 15 minutes, I guess.
Uh-huh. Yeah, what took you so long? That's not that far from here.
Well, you see, at first we thought they might be backfires from a car. So we drove on a ways, and we talked it over and decided to come back and report it.
Okay. Hogan, take down their names and addresses.
Okay, Bud. You first.
Huh?
Come on.
Marco Lorenz.
Address?
Bowman Lorenz Library, Ridgely Street.
Mm-hmm. Ridgely Street. Okay, your name?
Edward Bowman.
Mm-hmm. Address?
Same as his.
Business together?
Yeah. Is that all?
I guess so.
Just a minute, boys. You say you run the Bowman Lorenz Library? Books?
Yeah, that's right.
Uh-huh. What were you fellas doing driving down near 4th and Powell Street this late at night?
Well, you see,
we were going on a vacation. We wanted to get an early start. You know, miss the traffic.
Yeah, I see.
Yeah. We even got our suitcases out in the car.
Oh. You even got your suitcase in the car, huh? Hogan.
Yeah?
Maybe you better run out and take a look at the car. Yeah. And you'd better bring in the suitcase.
Okay.
Hey, what's the idea?
It's dangerous to leave valuables in a parked car on the street at night. You wouldn't want it stolen now, would you?
Yeah, but we was just leaving.
Yeah? Well, if you don't mind, I'd like for you to stick around for a few minutes. You see, I'm very much interested in books.
Books?
Yeah. This one, for instance. Called Temptations of a Gun Mall. Ever see this one before?
Why, I don't know.
That's funny. Because it has your stamp on it, see? The Bowman Lorenz Library.
Yeah, well, where'd you get that book?
Oh, I picked it up a few minutes ago. Oh, good, Hogan. You got the suitcase.
Yes, sir.
Well, gentlemen, I've been thinking about taking a vacation myself. And I'd like to see what to take along. You won't mind if I just take a look at what you're carrying, will you?
You can't do that. You can't search a person's possessions without a charge against
And who them. Knows? Maybe I've got a charge.
What?
Maybe the charge is suspicion of robbery, shall we say? Okay, Hogan, open up.
Robbery? That's ridiculous.
Is it? How'd you find, Hogan?
Well, nothing much, Sarge. Kids' clothes.
Hey, wait a minute. Something down here at the bottom. Hey, Sarge, take a look.
Yes, that's what I was looking for.
What'd you find?
As if you didn't know. Jewels. I suppose you didn't think they'd be missed this soon. But we got an emergency call to go out to Mrs. Miles' house about an hour ago.
Shorty,
Listen, you can't pin a jewel robbery on us. That old dame can't do that to us. We know who did it, no matter what she told you.
She didn't tell us anything. When we got there, she was sitting on a sofa with this book in her hand.
So what?
But she wasn't reading. She couldn't. You see, she had a little round bullet hole right between the eyes.
No. No.
Lock him up, Hogan. On suspicion of murder.
Well, that was quite a mix-up, wasn't it? For a crime that was supposed to be foolproof. What Eddie and Marco didn't know was that Shorty pumped a bullet into Mrs. Miles and was getting away with her jewels when they kidnapped him to help them rob the security office. Yes, Shorty killed Mrs. Miles. Eddie and Marco shot Shorty. And now they'll die for the murder Shorty committed. It all came out even, didn't it? Well, no, not quite. Because, you see, in the hospital ward, the doctor bends over a still small figure. He shakes his head. Shorty Johnson will live. The shots Eddie fired didn't kill him. So Eddie and Marco will burn for a crime they didn't commit. And Shorty will go free for it. Yes, free. But he won't get off without paying. Oh, no. Because as a result of the gun wounds, the mightiest might of them all, the tumbling Tom Thumb, who lived by his agility and skill, will lie helplessly in his bed all the rest of his life, a hopeless paralytic.
Entertainment by the Signal Oil Company, marketers of Signal's famous Go Farther gasoline and motor oil, and your neighborhood Signal dealer, at your service to keep your car running for the duration. The Whistler was produced and directed by George W. Allen. The story was by Harriet Rieg. Music composed and conducted by Wilbur Hatch. This program is being transmitted to our troops overseas by the Armed Forces Radio Service. Next Sunday night at 7:30, the Whistler will bring you another Signal Mystery. Bill Pennell speaking. This is CBS, the Columbia Broadcasting System.
That's one of the best mysteries of all time, Lisa. The Whistler, September 3rd, 1944, practically foolproof. And that starred Jane Morgan and Walter Tetley with Bill Forman as the Whistler. Let's take a break here on the WGN Radio Theater. We'll be back in a flash. All right, in our next hour, Lisa, we are going to tune in to more classic radio. Sound good?
I'm ready and waiting.
All right, we have a good detective adventure with Rogue's Gallery starring Dick Powell. You know, Dick Powell was a crooner, and then he got the chance to play murder in the film Murder, My Sweet. He was Philip Marlowe in that, and then everybody wanted him to be a detective on radio. He did Rogue's Gallery, and then later he did Richard Diamond Private Detective, which was created by Blake Edwards. So we have a terrific detective adventure of Rogue's Gallery for you. And then after that, comedy, because you know what?
Yes, I do. Everybody's asking for the comedy.
Our listeners love comedies.
Yeah, well, they're after my own heart, because so do I.
And this is a really funny one. My Friend Irma with Marie Wilson and Kathy Lewis. So we have two more radio shows for our listeners that take us all the way up till 2 o'clock in the morning. And then tomorrow, we will be back here at 11 o'clock. And
or
you know,
tonight.
Well, yeah.
And about midnight.
You know what we have?
I do.
Your uncle.
Nero Wolf. We are very tight-knit family.
Yeah, and then it's the Screen Director's Playhouse. And then we've had tons of people asking for the Edgar Bergen and Charlie McCarthy show. So we have an episode with special guest Martha Ray. That's coming up tomorrow, because we're here Saturdays and Sundays, 11 to 2 o'clock in the morning. And if you want to tell us what you want to hear, Mike, how do they do that?
I would go on to Facebook, look up WGN Radio Theater, like the page, and then submit a post.
And I promise to answer. I always love to talk to our listeners.
Yeah, please post to us if you have any questions. Lisa has the fastest thumbs in the West.
True.
Probably in the East, North and South as well. All right, so it is midnight here on the WGN Radio. What's up, Lisa Wolf? It is 7 minutes after 12, so it's Sunday morning, which means we're going to be here for another couple hours.
I'm raring to go. I feel like I could stay here all night somehow. You know? I know.
I had a
couple. Bustling in here.
I had a little nap.
I had a nap today, too.
Yeah, I had about a 45-minute nap, and then I had some coffee and then tea. So I'm kind of jacked up.
Well, good. I like it that way. At least you're not snoring in the green room today.
And these classic radio shows jack me up. I like listening to these. Yeah, I'm kind of hopped up right now.
Really?
On some caffeine.
Great.
Yeah. So now would be a good time to ask me for a raise or whatever.
Oh,
I'm in a good mood.
I will keep that in mind as the night progresses.
The answer is no.
Okay.
But you can ask. I mean, you know, if you don't ask, right?
Right. I'm going to work on that.
So we're here Saturday and Sunday nights, Lisa Wolf and I, along with Mike Estella, Shane Reardon. And we're here playing these wonderful gems of the 1930s and 40s and 50s. People don't maybe realize this, but there wasn't always television. Television wasn't around forever, you know.
Get out of here.
It was invented. I mean, actually, it was invented like in the 20s, but it really didn't permeate into the... Hey, see, we're both on the same page here. Didn't permeate into the lexicon or into our homes until really the late 1940s, early 50s. So before that...
So do you remember when you got your first...
Oh,
your
yeah.
family got
yeah,
the first
thanks,
TV
Lisa.
In the 40s?
Yeah. Actually, I remember one time I was watching Goldfinger. This was in the, like, 60s, late 60s. I was a little kid. I was watching the James Bond movie Goldfinger. And right at one of the best parts, the TV blew up. It actually blew up with all of us there. So, yeah, they didn't have it fixed. They didn't have the... Now you don't have to worry about your TV blowing up
remember
and potentially
play with the antennas
knocking
put,
your
like,
eye out or something.
Tin foil. I remember putting
oh, yeah.
tin foil on the antenna.
Well, you had 2, 5, 7, 9, and 32. That's
11,
what you had in 11.
Right. Yeah.
But I digress. You know, but back before there was television, there was radio drama, and that's what this show is all about. We play homage to those classic radio shows of the 30s, 40s, and 50s every single Saturday and Sunday night. And if you want to hear a certain show, just go to our Facebook page at WGN Radio Theater, search for us, and then let us know what you want to hear, and we will play it. We have zillions of shows. Actually, we have like 100,000 shows.
That's
so
like
we'll play.
Zillions.
Yeah, we'll play what you want to hear. Okay, all of this is brought to you in part by Cat's Pride.
It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actress stars in the upcoming musical comedy La La Land about the romantic relationship between a jazz pianist and an aspiring actress.
What do you win?
$25 gift card for Lou Malnati's delicious pizza.
All right. If you know who this actress is, call us 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. You will hear her now talking to Michael Keaton, who plays her dad in 2014's Birdman.
You had a career, Dad, before the third comic book movie, before people started to forget who was inside that bird costume.
All right. If you know who that is, call us 312-981-7200. We'll find our Lou Malnati's winner after this break.
We are back with the WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
You had a career, Dad, before the third comic book movie, before people started to forget who was inside that bird costume.
And we have Carol on the line from Chicago. Hey, Carol.
Hey, Lisa.
How are you?
I'm great. How are you guys?
We're good. I'll speak
we're
for
good, Carl,
too. We're both good.
You know, if you take the O out of Carol, you'll have Carl. So there you go.
Exactly.
Yeah, that's a little scary. I'm going to go with Carol on this one. Carol, who is that celebrity?
That is Emma Stone.
Yes, the beautiful Emma Stone. And you are right.
I'd date her. I would date Emma Stone.
I would date her. Carol.
I'd like to see that.
Carol, do you know what you've won?
Illuminati?
Yes, indeed. Illuminati's gift certificate, home of the best deep dish pizza. So you can check them out at Illuminati's.com and visit one of their 40-plus Chicagoland locations. Carol, I had Illuminati's pizza last night for dinner. It was delicious.
Oh, I know. It's great. Thank you so much, you
Take
guys.
Take care. Thanks for listening.
Thanks, Carol. Appreciate it. All right. Ready for a detective adventure starring Dick Powell?
Yes, sir.
All right. Rogue's Gallery came to Mutual Radio in 1945, and Richard Rogue was a private detective who inevitably would end up being knocked out each week and spending his dream time in acerbic conversations with his subconscious self, who was Igor, which is Rogue spelled backwards. It was sponsored by Fitch Shampoo. I don't think there's Fitch Shampoo anymore. I don't think you do your hair with Fitch Shampoo,
hey,
do you, Lisa?
No,
I use that, Carl.
Do you? Okay,
yeah,
so it's around. So,
so that's
series,
the problem, huh?
Yep, the series was revived as a 1947 summer season for Barry Sullivan as Richard Rogan. Then Chester Morris, who played Boston Blackie in the movies, also played Richard Rogue. But we have the first guy to do it, Dick Powell. Let's go back to a broadcast date of June 23rd, 1946. This is called The Star of Savoy, and this is heard on NBC, part one of Rogue's Gallery.
The F.W. Fitch Company presents Dick Powell as private investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. Makers of Fitch's saponified coconut oil shampoo and Fitch's shaving creams presents Dick Powell as private investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery. For the benefit of those who tuned in hoping to hear Cass Daly, may I introduce myself? My name is Richard Rogue. I'm a private investigator. I said it and I'm glad. Private investigator. That's the Harvard way of saying I'm a guy who has parlayed a hard head and a great curiosity about other people's affairs into a career. At least that's the way the Homicide Squad's Lieutenant Urban, who shares my interest in unalive bodies, feels about me. And I'd also better tell you now that I have a certain personal idiosyncrasy. I hold audible consultations with my alter ego once in a while, when I'm confused and in need of advice. His name is Ugor, which is Rogue spelled backwards, and he's a very fresh little spook. Of course, I wouldn't have known I had an alter ego if Betty Callahan, the girl I would rather be marooned on a desert island with than not, hadn't browbeaten me into reading Sigmund Freud. Betty, who is the sharpest newspaper woman in town, extends upward about 5 feet from the floor, has hair the color of cordovan leather and firelight, and a tip-tilted Irish nose shying away from the most kissable mouth in the world. She's wonderful. And on this day I'm going to tell you about, she and I had had lunch together. She had an hour to kill, so she walked back to my office with me.
You know, Richard, this is much too nice a day to work.
Look, Betty, if you can get rid of that assignment you have for this afternoon, we'll go to the races, huh?
Oh, I haven't been out this year.
I got some information from Herb Hyde at the cigar store in the lobby. He gave me two horses who gave him their word they were ready today.
Talking horses?
Only to Herb. They don't speak English, but fortunately he speaks horse. Now get on the phone and ask that slave driver at your city desk for the afternoon off. Tell him you have to go to your grandmother's wedding or something.
Well, I'll try, but it's not going to work, and I know it.
Just sit right down there and pay no attention to that sign asking you to leave a nickel in the cigar box for every call.
Oh, thank you.
Oh, it's nothing. It's nothing. I'll do anything for the girl I love.
Better think of something better than my grandmother's wedding. I know. I'll tell him I want to go to the race.
Okay, but...
Here, you're Richard Rogue.
Yeah?
A detective in New York named Clement Cohan referred me to you. My name is Charles McDonald.
Yeah, I got his letter.
I got to see you right away.
Go on in that office there. I'll be in a minute.
All right. Please, hurry.
What was the matter with him? He looked sick.
Probably been drinking. I noticed that when I...
Oh, wait a minute. Hello, give me the city desk, please.
Now, make it a good story. Tell him that your grandmother...
Hello, Walter. This is Betty Callahan.
Look, can you put somebody else on that Stubble story this afternoon? I want to go to the races. But Walter... Yes, but... Okay.
What did he say?
No.
Oh.
He told me to get right back to the paper, and I like my job, so here I go.
Oh, well, then wait a minute. I'll go in and talk with this guy, give him a quick brush and go over with you. Maybe I can talk Walter into letting you take the afternoon off for the betterment of racing, huh?
Well, you'll have to hurry. Walter's mad.
Well, just take it easy. I'll be right back. Hey. Hey, what's the matter? Good Lord, Betty.
Richard, what happened? Oh, he fell out of his chair.
Yeah. Get Urban on the phone and call it for an ambulance.
Oh, Rich. He's dead.
Yeah. Yeah, very dead. I should be inured to the sight and smell of sudden death by this time, but it always does something to me. It freezes my stomach and gives me a dull ache at the base of my brain. When I left Betty Callahan on the phone in my reception room and walked into my private office, I found my mysterious visitor falling forward out of his chair in death. I knelt by his side and loosened the long top coat he was wearing. The front of his suit and his shirt were red, and there were two bullet holes, one to the right of his heart and one a little below it. I tried to blame myself for not talking to him at once, for not understanding that his staggering, shuffling gait was not caused by drinking, but by loss of blood. I looked in his billfold for identification. His name was Charles McDonald, and he was assistant manager of a Park Avenue jewelry store in New York. There was a piece of paper in his hand. I looked at it. It carried an address, 1392 Squirrel Hill. I put the paper in my pocket. Then I heard the outer office door open, and a feminine voice said,
"Is this Mr. Robert's office?"
I jumped to my feet and ran out there, closing the door behind me. There was a girl standing by the desk talking to Betty, a dark girl. She had a figure with enough O's in it to put it in the $1 million column, and a face to match. Betty said,
"This is Mr. Rogue. Where's my husband?"
"Well, I'm sure I don't know. What's his name?"
"Charles McDonald. He's here. I saw him come in."
"That's very interesting. Excuse me a moment. Betty, are they on their way?"
"Yes, both of them."
"Thanks. Now, Mrs. McDonald, what makes you think your husband is here?"
"I saw him come in here."
"You were on the elevator with him?"
"No. I just happened to be passing on the street. I saw Charles and spoke to him. He didn't even look at me. He walked right by. I couldn't understand it. He looked sick. I saw him come into this building. I followed him in."
"Oh, where have you been all this time?"
"I missed his elevator. Why are you questioning me like this? I know he's here. I want to see him."
"Well, if you missed his elevator, what makes you think he's here? This is a big building, you know."
"I waited for his elevator to come back to the ground floor. I talked with the operator. He remembered my husband and told me that Charles had asked for your office. Where is he, Mr. Rogue? Where is he?"
Mrs. McDonald, would you just please have a chair? He's here all right, but he's busy. You'll have to wait." "Oh, hello, Lieutenant Urban. Come in."
"Well, Rogue, what goes on? Where's the..."
"Urban, I want to see you in the next office. Follow me, will you?"
"Well, he's sure dead. How did it happen, Rogie?"
"I'll tell you all I know. He came in here looking pretty sick. I thought he'd been drinking. That long top coat he had on covered the fact that he was bleeding to death. I told him to come in here and wait. I came in about 2 minutes later, just as he pitched forward out of his chair and died. That's when I called you, or had Betty call you. She was here when he came in, saw the whole thing."
"Looks like a .38 caliber job. Two around the heart."
"His name is Charles McDonald, and he's from New York City."
"Oh, that's interesting. Who's the girl outside with Callahan?"
His wife."
"Well, where does she fit in here?"
"Well, she..."
"McDonald, you can't go in there."
"I want to see Mr. Rose."
"Sit down."
"I'm going in there."
"No, Mr. McDonald, no, you can't go in there."
"I know he's in there. I'm going in."
"Charles!
Well, when that girl saw Charles McDonald lying there, as dead as yesterday's beer, she folded up right over him like a dropped piece of string. Urban and Betty and I were still working over when the medical examiner and the technical squad from homicide showed up. We picked her up, carried her into the outer office. As soon as she came to, Betty gave her a glass of water, which she sipped nervously when Urban started throwing questions at her like baseballs.
"Mrs. McDonald, I'm sorry to have to question you at this time. Will you please put that glass down and listen to me? Now, your husband was obviously murdered. I have to have the information.
I don't know who could have done it. My husband was a businessman. He wasn't mixed up in anything that could have caused his murder.
Now, what kind of business was your husband in?
He was in the jewelry business. Manager of a big store in New York.
Mm-hmm.
Richard,
what was your
address
in New York?
I have to get back to the paper. I have to get the story.
Okay, wait a minute, and I'll walk out in the hall with you.
All right, come on.
Where are you going, Ruggie?
I'm taking Betty to a cab. I'll be back.
See that you are.
Come on.
What are you doing pulling me along like this? I have high heels on.
I'm in a hurry, baby.
But you told Lieutenant Urban you'd be right back.
I told him I'd be back, and I will. My rent's paid for another month.
Well, where are you going?
To do a little investigating. That's what it says in my card, investigator. Now, look, honey, when we get downstairs, I'm going to have to leave you. I'll see you tonight here at the office at 7 o'clock.
Gone down. Hello, Mr. Rogue.
Hi, Shorty. Drop this thing, will you? I'm in a hurry.
All right, that is the first portion of Rogue's Gallery, June 23rd, 1946, The Star of Savoy, starring Dick Powell. We'll get back to that in just a few moments. Lisa Wolf, right, you like these detective shows?
I do like The Detective, and a lot of our listeners like them, too, so we're all on the same page here.
All right, my pal Darren Foley is here, and Darren has some new businesses in Barrington opening up, right, my hometown. My good old hometown, Barrington, Illinois. What about the businesses opening up in there? We want to give them a little shout-out.
Well, Carl, there's a lot of great businesses that have recently opened up within the last few years, and it's just a great place to shop. It's a great place for restaurants. There's a few taverns that have opened. So, I mean, it's just a
libation or two?
Absolutely.
All right.
Yes.
Tell us what they are.
Well, we have one that's just one of my favorites. It's Grassroots of Barrington.
Right,
it's
I've been there many times.
It's like a general store that has it's a music venue. They have a lot of great guys coming up from Nashville. It's fantastic. I love it.
Okay. What else you got in Barrington to talk about?
Well, if you have a smoking habit and you want
to
kick that habit,
okay,
you go to Vaporworks of Barrington.
Oh, because you can get like the vitamin vapor, right, and the good vapors for you too, right?
They have it all. They make their own juice. They have all kinds of great specials every month.
Right.
And Mike, of the owner of Vaporworks, is just, he's an incredible guy. He likes to help everyone. So
very
if
cool.
You need to quit smoking, that's the place to go.
That's where you go. Yeah. All right. Mike needs to quit smoking, right, Mike? That could be good for you.
I was afraid to say something.
Mike's like, I'm going out for a smoke.
Hey, I've tried a lot of different things, actually. But I have done the vapor things and don't know.
Yeah?
You know?
All right. Got one more?
Yeah, I do. Actually, both of my boys go to Consolidated Music.
Ah, yeah, I've been there.
Yes. And
take the music lessons there,
absolutely.
Yes.
Absolutely. Guitar,
yes,
piano, ukulele, whatever you need.
Yeah.
And Jeff is a great guy. He's a great owner. And he has one of his greatest assets is Mario Licardi.
Yeah.
He's an incredible musician and a great instructor, great teacher. He knows how to teach. And he has a class called Rockstar 101. It's fantastic.
And a website there for Consolidated Music?
Consolidatedmusic.net.
All right, .net. Very cool. All right. Thanks, Darren.
Okay, thank
appreciate
you,
it, buddy. All right, let's take a break. Then it's more here on the WGN Radio Theater. All right, Uncle Roger.
Uncle Roger.
That was from last night.
Everybody has an Uncle Roger,
well,
right?
Of course everybody.
Well, now I have one.
Oh, my gosh. Hey, Dan.
I'll remember you and your will.
Yeah, I'll remember you and yours.
Thank you.
Hey, everybody. Dan Jaffe, the CEO of Cat's Pride, is going to be here tomorrow. Well, actually, today.
Tonight.
He's going to be here tonight.
Right.
Yeah, giving away another year's supply of Cat's Pride kitty litter to a lucky winner. Now, if you have not sent in a photo of you and your cat, you should do it pronto. Right, Mike?
Yes, immediately. Just send the picture of you and your cat to catspridephoto@gmail.com. Provide your name, your cat's name, city, and state.
All right, so send it in to catspridephoto@gmail.com, right?
Right, you got
easy.
It.
Yeah.
Wait, can you
I haven't memorized that. Do
you did?
That?
You're not looking down at your nose,
you know,
there.
All of this classic radio facts and trivia in my head.
Takes up all the space.
Takes up all of the space.
I know,
space.
There's nothing left.
Nothing. I mean, I can't get anything in there, but yet I memorized that. That's pretty amazing.
I am impressed.
Right?
Yeah.
I'm like a superhero.
You are
right?
a superhero.
It's like I'm like a Marvel superhero yes. that I can memorize anything.
Yeah.
Well, this is not true because I ask you to print things out for me all the time, and I don't always get that. So.
You know, yeah, no.
You're not exactly the superhero of the memory.
I think he's a superhero.
I like to think I am a superhero.
I think you're my superhero.
If so, I would be Batman. All right, it's time to get back to this. We're tuning in to Rogue's Gallery. Dick Powell stars as Richard Rogue. Here's the conclusion now of The Star of Savoy on Rogue's Gallery.
I shot out of that building like a bat out of a belfry and jumped into a cab. I slipped the cab jockey a bill that made his eyes pop open like dropped eggs and told him he could keep it if he could get me to 1392 Squirrel Hill in 5 minutes. That's the address I found in Charles McDonald's hand. We broke every law but the 18th Amendment the next 4 minutes and 50 seconds, and I jumped out of the cab, hit the front steps of that big, deserted-looking old house in the dead run. The door was ajar, so I took my gun out of its shoulder holster, put it in my side coat pocket, and walked right in, into a blackjack. Oh! My glazed eyes told my brain there was a dead man lying there. And then my head hit one of the stars which were surrounding me. And the star exploded with a blinding flash. I felt myself flying upward at a speed that made me dizzy. I was grabbing at the tails of comets, trying to break my speed, but nothing could stop me. I looked down at the earth and I seemed to be looking through the wrong end of a telescope. It was a little round ball, that's all. I couldn't get my breath. I fought for it. And then my lungs seemed to explode and everything was peaceful. I opened my eyes and I was on Cloud 8, my home away from home. Ugor was sitting there, dangling his little short legs over eternity and combing his long white beard with his stubby fingers.
Hello, Rokey. Been using your head for a blackjack backstuff again, huh?
Oh, never mind the cracks. I feel awful. Who did it?
Some big guy I never saw before.
But why would he want to hit me?
Well, you must have been interfering in his business, Chiefy. There was a dead man in that room, you know.
Yeah, I know it. What was I doing there? I'm a little foggy.
Well, you went there because it was the address that was printed on that piece of paper you found in Charles McDonald's hand. Remember?
Oh, yeah. Hey, I better get downstairs. I got work to do. Help me over the side, will you, Ugor?
Oh, look, Rogie. There's no dough in this case for you. Why don't you get out of it? You want to get yourself killed for free?
I'll get out of it if I ever get back downstairs. Give me a shove, will you? I'm going down there.
Okay, Chiefy. But take care of yourself now. So long, Rogie.
I opened one eye carefully. Then I closed it again so fast that I was afraid the guy who was watching me would hear it snap. He was a big man, and his eyes were the blue of ice cubes. Full of ice cubes with floodlights behind them. Hot ice. One of his hands was holding a gun, and the gun was pointed right where my heart would have been if it hadn't been in my throat.
No use playing possum now, Mr. Rogue. Mm. No, indeed. Mm. I am aware that you have returned to consciousness.
Oh, who are you?
My name is Moore. Now come, Mr. Rogue. I realize that you undoubtedly have a headache, probably a splitting headache, and I'm regretful. But we can finish our business in just a moment if you'll sit up and talk with me.
Okay, I'll try.
Excellent. Now, Mr. Rogue, where is it?
Where is what?
Now, time is of the essence. Let us not waste it. You know what I'm speaking of. The Star of Savoy. Where is it?
You have to believe me. I don't know whether you're talking about a burlesque dancer, a passenger liner, or a military decoration. What is the Star of Savoy, and why am I supposed to know something about it?
You're jesting, of course.
Oh, believe me, I never jest with a head like this. Look, Missy, you got the wrong number. Do you think I killed this man here?
Oh, indeed, I don't. He was killed by a man named Charles MacDonald. You know Mr. MacDonald, of course.
Well, vaguely, yes. He was dead when I met him.
Delightful sense of humor. I always admire a man with a sense of humor.
Good. Well, then, look, I'm going to get out of here.
That's possible. Entirely possible. After you tell me where I may find the Star of Savoy, Mr. Rogue.
I don't know. I don't know anything about it. Don't even know what it is.
It's a large diamond, Mr. Rogue. One of the largest in the world. Formerly owned by the Hohenzollern family. Recently the property of a New York collector of famous jewels. It's a magnificent jewel, Rogue. Magnificent. Where is it?
I don't know. I suppose you think I came here after it.
Oh, I wouldn't know about that, Mr. Rogue. But you say you met my friend Charles MacDonald after he was dead. Very cleverly put. But when MacDonald left here, he went from here directly to your office. He was carrying the Star of Savoy in his coat. I know that to be true. I was following him.
We searched him, the police and I. He didn't have the Star of Savoy or any other diamond over a carat anyplace on him. That's the truth. Only thing I found on him was this address. That's why I came here.
That's very strange. Yes, quite baffling. Have you met a strikingly beautiful girl? Tall, dark black hair, brown eyes, very appealing.
You mean MacDonald's wife?
Well, yes, MacDonald's wife. You've met her?
She was at my office when he died. Who is this stiff here?
A former partner of mine. He was attempting to double-cross me, poor fellow. You see, Rogue, he and I had a market for the Star of Savoy, a very fine market. That's why we hoped to get it from Mr. MacDonald today. MacDonald was most unreasonable, most unreasonable. Of course, I intend to continue in my efforts to acquire the Star of Savoy. This dark young lady, Mrs. MacDonald, was she alone with him at any time? Either while he was alive or after his death?
Well, no. She came into my office and saw that he was dead and fainted.
Oh, I see. Well, Mr. Rogue, I'm inclined to believe your story about knowing nothing about my diamond. I think I'll be running along. But just to make sure that you don't use your meager talents to pursue me, I'll have to... Oh!
Now back to Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Well, what had started out to be a lovely, lucid day had certainly turned out to be as ugly and mad as a giraffe with a sore throat. The date I had with Betty Callahan had been interrupted by a stranger walking into my office and dropping dead of pre-digested murder. I got knocked silly and came to find a guy named Moore politely annoyed with me about a diamond I'd never seen. So annoyed with me, in fact, that he was determined to kick my teeth out. I saw that big shoe swing from my jaw and I ducked. Right into it. Oh, it would have been so easy for me to pass out again. But I fought it. I couldn't. I needed the time. I vaguely heard the fading footsteps of Mr. Moore through the aura of pain which was surrounding me like a fog. And after he'd faded out, I sat there for a while. Then I got to my hands and knees and crawled until my head cleared a little. When I got to my feet, I ran out of the house, grabbed a cab for the Park Crest Hotel. I thought I'd find Moore there looking for Mrs. MacDonald. Oh, I must have looked like a hit-and-run victim as I approached the very proper clerk. He backed away, but I reached across the counter and grabbed him.
Let go of me!
I want some information. I want it fast. What room is Mrs. Charles MacDonald of New York City in?
Mrs. MacDonald?
Stop stalling. What's her room number?
We have a Mr. MacDonald, but there is no Mrs. MacDonald. His wife is in New York.
How do you know that?
I sent a wire to her for him last night. There's no Mrs. MacDonald out here. And now let me go before I call the house officer.
I remembered then. Mr. Moore had hesitated when I pegged that tall, dark girl as Mrs. MacDonald. That girl was an imposter. My head was still doing the Virginia reel with variations on the turns, but I couldn't slow up now. In spite of the racket inside my skull, I was thinking straight and clearly. I ran to my office, it was only a block, and I got that glass that Mrs. MacDonald had been twirling in her fingers as Urban questioned her. I took it down to police headquarters and asked the sergeant of the fingerprint bureau to dust it for prints and telephoto the prints to the FBI in Washington. I told him he could find me in my office. I went back to my office and sank into my swivel chair. and let sleep take over.
Richard, what has happened to you? Oh, honey, you look so awful.
Betty. Hello, baby. What are you doing here?
It's 7 o'clock, Richard. You told me to meet you here at 7 o'clock.
Seven? Mm-hmm. Oh, seven it is? Oh, hey, what about those fingerprints?
Fingerprints?
Excuse me a minute, baby. I gotta call the identification bureau.
You should be in a hospital. Oh, Richard, you can't take me to dinner looking like...
Well, honey, think how I feel.
Identification Bureau. Sergeant James.
Sergeant, this is Richard Rogue. You get an answer from the FBI on those prints I gave you?
Yeah, just came in, Rogue. They belong to a girl named Alice Ryan. 3 years ago when they took them at the aircraft company where she worked. She lived at 4435 Ethel Avenue in North Hollywood.
Any criminal record?
Arrested once and a competence rap 4 years ago. Dismissed for lack of evidence.
Thanks, Sarge. I owe you a cigar. Come on, Betty. We're going to go to North Hollywood. I'll explain why in a cab. Come on.
No, Alice does not live here anymore. She moved into Los Angeles about 7 months ago when she quit her job at the airplane factory.
Did she leave a forwarding address?
Oh, yes. I'll get it for you. Just a minute.
You think she has the diamond, don't you, Richard?
Sure. She lifted it off McDonald's body when she fainted over him.
Oh, how awful. Here it is. It is a long drive from here in Los Angeles.
Thanks.
Alice Ryan? No, she doesn't live here anymore. She came into money or something. She lives in Hollywood now.
Do you know her address there?
Big guy around here acted an hour ago. It's North Serrano. Oh, wait a minute, I'll get it for you.
A big man. That's the man?
Yeah, that's the man. He has an hour's head start.
Here it is. I wrote it down for you.
Oh, thank you, sir. Okay, now, Betty. Ring the bell and then stand back. Clear back against the wall and stay away from the windows.
All right, Richard. You take care of yourself now.
I always do. Stand where you are, and I'll go knock on the door.
All right.
You stay right there, Betty. I'm going to try the door. Now stay where you are.
I will.
Come in. Come in, Mr. Rogue, and don't attempt to be clever because you present a beautiful target there in the doorway.
Where's Alice Ryan?
She's here. Drop your gun, please, Mr. Rogue. I can see you, you know. I have a bit of advantage. Drop your gun, Mr. Rogue. Close the door, Mr. Rogue. Now that I've turned the light on, you can see that you have found Alice Ryan.
Oh, brother.
Yes. I'm sorry. I was forced to eliminate her, Mr. Rogue. She was most unreasonable about giving me the Star of Savoy. She chose to pit her ordinary brain against my genius in this race to see who would be the possessor of the stone after Charles MacDonald was eliminated. And now, Mr. Rogue, you find yourself in much the same position.
Yeah, I guess I'm not very smart. You have the diamond?
Indeed, I have. And I think perhaps you deserve a glimpse of it. There. Is that not the most inspiring sight you ever seen, Mr. Rogue? Look at it. Listening there. 100 people have died, I would imagine, Mr. Rogue, in the history of this stone. Yes, at least 100. I have spent the last 10 years scheming, contriving, bribing, stealing to get this lovely thing. And now, Mr. Rogue, it's mine.
Yeah, you got it. What are you going to do with it? Just sit there and look at it?
I can get $1 million for it. $1 million in cold cash and no questions asked. $1 million. I'm not at all sure that that is enough, Mr. Rogue. And now, I'm afraid I'm going to be forced, regretfully, to remove you.
There was cold murder in the ice blue eyes that were looking into mine. Moore was enjoying every breath of my last few minutes on Earth. He was waiting for me to break. And all the time, he was talking in that cultured iceberg voice. Then I saw Betty. She was hugging the wall in the next room, creeping silently toward the killer. I wanted to shout at her, to tell her to go away. And then... Yeah. Knocked his gun up the air when you scared him silly. Oh, Betty, Betty, bless your little pointed head, but why did you do it?
Oh, Richard.
Betty, well, of all the times to faint, isn't that just like a woman? Well, the police took it from there, and the story was pretty plain. Moore was the head of a gang of international jewel thieves, consisting of the man I found dead on Squirrel Hill, Alice with the dark black hair, and himself. They had offered Charles McDonald a fortune to steal the Star of Savoy from the Park Avenue establishment where he was employed and where it was on exhibition. They planned to kill him when he delivered the stone. But the trio triple-crossed themselves, and finally only Moore remained alive, which was a temporary thing, because Moore soon paid the final score for the murders he committed. And, well, I got a $5,000 reward for breaking the case. $5,000 for just getting batted around a little. isn't bad, is it, huh? I split the reward with Betty Callahan, who certainly saved my life. And she went right out and spent her half on a fur cape. You know, women should never have money. They don't know how to handle it. Of course, the first time she wore the cape, she looked so lovely that I took her to the races and lost my half on a horse named Investigator. Oh, well, money isn't as important as true love, but there's a lot more of it. You know what I mean? This is Dick Powell again, ladies and gentlemen. It's awfully nice to meet you on a new network. I hope you enjoyed our story tonight. Ray Buffum wrote it. Leith Stevens composed and conducted the music, and D. Engelbach produced and directed. Be with us again next Sunday, will you? We have a story for you about a triangle, a rendezvous, and a plan that failed. We call it Lady with a Gun. Thanks for listening, and now here's Jim Doyle.
Listen again next week at this same time to hear Dick Powell as Private Investigator Richard Rogue in Rogue's Gallery.
Laugh a while, let a song be your style, you stitch shampoo. Don't despair, use your head, save your hair, you stitch shampoo.
After and between Fitch shampoos, you can keep your hair shining and manageable by using a few drops of Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic every day. Fitch's Ideal Hair Tonic is not sticky or greasy, yet it gives your hair that well-groomed look.
There you have it. That is Rogue's Gallery, going back to June 23rd, 1946, The Star of Savoy, starring Dick Powell. And also in the cast, Peter Leeds. Peter Leeds was the character, he played that character, Ugor. And in every one of these shows, he would get hit on the head, Dick Powell, as Richard Rogue. And he would spend some time talking to his inner self. And that was, Ugor was Rogue spelled backwards. Yeah, that was the hook on this show.
I think we all need to spend some time talking to our inner self,
yeah.
I think
we all need some time being hit on the head and being knocked out and talking to our inner self. Yeah,
that's what I said.
That would work out really well.
That's exactly what I just
Fitch
said.
Fitch shampoo, although Shane says he uses this.
I think you could use a little hair tonic tonight.
A little hair
personally.
Tonic? It's a little messy?
It's a little untonic-y.
It's on sale at Walgreens right now.
Walgreens, $2.95 a bottle.
It's a deal.
Let's get a bunch of them. All right, let's take a break here, and then it's more on the WGN Radio Theater. Lisa, wake up. Lisa, wake up. Man, third hour, she's out. I mean, Shane. We got to do something. We got to get her some
You know what? It's irresponsible, and it cannot go on any longer.
I mean, she's the co-host of the show. Wake up, guys.
I'm going to try harder. I'm so sorry.
If I have to stay up, you have to stay up.
You're right. You're always right, Carl.
Take a nap sometime.
I'm sorry. And I'm just shirking my duties, guys.
I hear hot coffee over the head. No, I'm sorry. Hot coffee, drinking it helps.
I'll keep that in mind. Thanks, Raj.
Anytime.
Uncle Raj.
You know, well, she uses that Fitch shampoo in her hair.
It's hair tonic.
Yeah.
Oh, Lisa. I'm telling you, I'm gonna have to have a talk with Stephanie and Todd.
Todd and Jimmy.
You know, and Jimmy.
Tell them.
I'm have a little talk with them.
Okay,
tell them how
I'm
you
shaking in my boots here, guys.
Sleeping on the job here. All right, so in this hour, we're going to tune into a great comedy on My Friend Irma with Marie Wilson and Kathy Lewis. You'll love it. All of this is brought to you in part by our sponsor, Cat's Pride.
Dum, da-dum, 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 da-dum. It's time for Celebrity Scoop, brought to you by Cat's Pride. Meow.
This actor stars in the upcoming computer-animated film Ice Age Collision Course and will reprise his role as Manny in the fifth installment of the Ice Age film series.
What do they win?
Ooh, $25 gift certificate for Lou Malnati's, home of Chicago's best deep dish pizza.
All right, if you know who this actor is, call us 312-981-7200. Here's a hint. He starred in a very popular comedy series on TV from 1996 through 2005.
When a man and a woman love each other very much, they get married. And then sometimes they decide to make a baby.
All right, that's what happens.
And that's how it
works. Once in a while, they decide to make a baby, Lisa. You made four of them. I made three of them.
That's a lot of babies.
All right, call us 312-981-7200. We'll find our winner after this break.
This is the one and only WGN Radio Theater playing Celebrity Scoop. Let's hear that movie clip one more time.
When a man and a woman love each other very much, they get married. And then sometimes they decide to make a baby.
And we have Jill on the line from Milwaukee. Hi, Jill.
Hi.
Are you a fan of that celebrity voice?
Oh, yes. He's very distinctive in his voice.
He sure is.
I've seen those movies, and he's really good in them.
He is great. Who is he?
Oh, he's Ray Romano.
Just making sure we're all on the same page. You are right, and you are a winner because you've got Ray Romano, and you have won a $25 Lou Malnati's gift certificate, home of Chicago's very best deep dish pizza. Check them out at one of their 40 Chicagoland locations and order online at loumalnati's.com. Jill, thank you so much for listening. We really appreciate it.
Thank you. I just love the show.
Oh, thank you.
Every weekend.
Oh, we do too. Thank you.
Appreciate that very much. We're here Saturdays and Sunday nights. Make sure you join us, folks. We're here at 11 o'clock till 2 o'clock in the morning. And it's our third hour on Saturday. We woke Lisa up, so we're going to listen to a good comedy now. Right, Lisa? Oh, she's out again.
Sorry, it's hard to stay awake.
I'm telling you what, man, she can saw logs, that girl.
Hey, watch it.
You are a snorer. Okay.
You're a kidder, Carl.
All right, time for My Friend Irma, situation comedy series set in Manhattan, although it was broadcast from L.A., 1947 through 1954 was its run. It was also adapted for movies and a TV series. Marie Wilson starred as Irma Peterson, a dim-witted blonde stenographer, and Kathy Lewis was her roommate, Jane Stacy. Irma's boyfriend, Al, played by John Brown, was a deadbeat, and Jane's boyfriend was a millionaire banker, Richard Rhinelander, played by Leif Erickson. It was created by Cy Howard, who also created Life with Luigi. All right, great. Great comedy series. Let's go back to January 12, 1948. It's called The Lucky Couple Contest, and it stars Marie Wilson now in My Friend Irma.
Lieber Brothers Company, makers of Swan, the soap with the exclusive Super Cream Blend, presents...
Our friend, Swan,
with My Friend Irma.
Starring Marie Wilson as Irma and Kathy Lewis as Jane.
Friendship, friendship, just a perfect friendship. When other friendships have been forgot, theirs will still be hot. My friend Irma.
Times we run into that old controversial subject, who is the more intelligent, man or woman? Now, me, Jane Stacy, I like to stick up for us gals. As an example of woman's intelligence, I invariably point to Madame Curie, Queen Victoria, Dorothy Parker. I think I'm doing all right until the opposition nods knowingly in the direction of Irma Peterson. And suddenly the ball game is over. Now, please don't misunderstand me. I love Irma Peterson. But there are times when... Well, for instance, last night, Irma was reading a book. She read it through once, and then I noticed that she started on the back page and seemed to be reading toward the front. Honey.
What is it, Jane?
You know, you read that book through once. What's the idea of reading it backwards?
Well, I want to be fair. After all, there are two sides to every story.
See what I mean? This goes on every day, and I'm certain that on this lovely Saturday afternoon, it's not going to be any different. But I promised to meet Irma for lunch, so I better call her.
Hello? Mr. Clyde's office.
Hi, honey. You through for the day?
Almost, Jane. Do you know where I can find a Canadian stamp?
Why do you want a Canadian stamp?
Well, Mr. Clyde dictated a letter, and he wants me to mail it to Canada right away.
Look, sweetie, just put a United States stamp on it.
Will it get there, Jane?
Sure, I have pull in Washington. Sweetie, where do you want to meet me?
Well, how about 49th and 6th? You know, the corner where the fat policeman stands.
The fat policeman?
Yes, you know the one who always says, "Hello, Irma, are you still lost?"
Oh, yeah, that one.
Oh, he's so nice, and he's interested in my health, too.
He is?
Yes, he keeps saying, "Kid, you've been standing in the sun too long."
All right, sweetie, all right. I'll meet you there in a few minutes. Bye.
Goodbye.
All right, hold on, Irma. Hold on. Oh, hello, Irma. It's you. You still lost?
Oh, hello, officer. I was just telling my girlfriend about you.
Well, that's nice. You better cross now. The light's green.
Thank you.
Don't mention it. Just keep out of the sun.
I will. Oh, there's my girlfriend, Jane. Jane.
Hello, honey.
Well, shall we just walk, do a little window shopping?
All right, Jane. Oh, look, Jane, isn't that cute? The kids are making men out of snow.
Yeah. You know, there are times when I think the man I'm in love with is made out of the same material.
Oh, Jane, you just got the blues because Richard hasn't proposed yet.
Yeah, I guess so.
Well, Jane, I don't think you're handling him right. I think Richard needs some competition, something to make him jealous.
For instance?
Well, get some other girls to go out with him.
What?
Well, then he'll see how much better you are than the others.
Oh, sweetie, I've already used more tricks than Houdini. There's nothing a girl can do. It's a man's world.
Well, that's what they say.
Yeah. You know, sometimes when I feel like this, I wish I was born a man.
Not me. I wouldn't want to be born a man.
Why not?
Well, I'd look so silly dancing with Al.
Oh, Irma, don't be ridiculous. Irma. Look ahead of you. There's an open manhole.
I've been down there. There's nothing to see. Jane?
What, honey?
Look at that window. Isn't that a beautiful bridal gown?
Yeah. It's very lovely. Come on, honey.
Oh, wait a minute, Jane. Gee, what a beautiful gown. And that girl in the window is certainly lucky.
Irma, she's just a dummy.
Well, what does she care as long as her husband loves her? Jane, I'd give anything in the world to be a bride.
Well, there stands Irma gazing pathetically at the bridal gown. I can tell by the expression on her face that she's picturing herself on her wedding day. She's just beaming with pride. Must be standing at the altar with Al. Now she's shaking her head up and down. Must be saying, "I do." No, there's a fly on her nose. Now she's extending her finger for the wedding band, and she's holding it up and admiring it. I don't know what kind of a wedding band it can be, but if Al gave it to her, it must say Corona, Corona. Sweetie, I hate to interrupt your daydreams, but we've got to be getting along.
All right, Jane, but first I'd like to put a deposit on that bridal gown.
Irma Peterson, how many times have I told you a bridal gown is the last thing a girl has to worry about?
The last?
Yes, the first thing is a man.
I can be a bride. I have Al.
Yeah, you have Al. You know, Irma, all brides go to their weddings with four things. Something old and something new, something borrowed and something blue. To this, you are adding a fifth thing.
What?
Something unemployed.
So what?
Well, Irma, you can't be happy with a man who can't give you the things that go with a home. For instance, furniture, a refrigerator, vacuum cleaner, dishes?
Yes, I guess Al could never make it on his unemployment check.
That's right. Well, come on, honey, let's have lunch.
No, I'm too sad to have lunch. I'm going to be an old maid. I'm going to go home. Hello? Oh, hello, Richard. No, Jane went off to do some shopping. I'm here alone. Huh? No, I'm not frightened. I've been alone before when there was no one with me. Well, that's a good idea. I'll turn on the radio for company. Yes, goodbye, Richard.
Listen, ladies, have you ever wished you might be a bride?
Oh, yes, I have.
You have? Then this program is going to make it possible for some lucky girl to have everything she'll ever need for that honeymoon cottage. Furniture, a refrigerator, a vacuum cleaner, a washing machine.
Dishes?
And, oh, yes, a complete set of dishes. Say nothing of some silverware. And now listen carefully, and I'll tell you how you can participate in our show. You have a pencil ready?
Can I use a fountain pen instead?
Or a fountain pen. Now, all you have to do is write a letter to this station.
How do you spell station?
K-N-X.
Thank you.
And state in 25 words or less why you want to be a bride. It's very simple. Just 25 words beginning, I want to be a bride because...
I want to be a bride because...
Now, please understand, this is not a contest. We merely select the 6 most interesting letters, and our studio audience will then choose the lucky couple. Please mail your letters to Lucky Couple. So until next week, this is Freddie Flip saying wedding bells to you all, and I do mean you all.
I want to be a bride because... Come in.
It's only me, Professor Kropotkin.
Hello, Irma, darling.
Oh, Professor, why are you limping?
Oh, my room is so dark, I keep falling over everything.
Well, why don't you turn on the lights?
I can't stand the sight of that place. Irma, where's Janie?
Oh, she's out. Oh, Professor, I'm so excited. Can you give me 25 words why a person should get married?
No, but I got plenty of words about why you shouldn't. What's it all about, Irma?
Well, I have to write a letter. I want to be a bride because, and if they select my letter, I get a refrigerator, a furniture, a vacuum cleaner, everything to make the house perfect.
And Al will be your husband?
Naturally.
This you call perfect?
Well, Professor, would you help me write the letter?
Help you?
Yes, you were once married. What made you get married?
A weakness in my character.
Oh, you men say that. But wasn't there something that made you feel wonderful in 25 words?
Listen, Irma, darling, with my wife, 25 words was just a breathing spell. You know, she once stopped talking for 5 seconds. We all thought she had lockjaw. No, Irma, I refuse to be accessory to this crime. Besides, I have to get back to my room. I'm having a fight with Mrs. O'Reilly.
What about?
I told her there's mice in my room as big as dogs.
What's she doing about it?
She wants to charge me extra for running a kennel club. Goodbye, Irma. Write your letter and good luck.
I want to be a bride because... because it's the only way for a girl to be married. No.
That, is that true, Lisa? Is that the only way mm-hmm. you can become a bride?
What?
Is if you're married,
yes,
right?
That's it.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. I probably. I don't know. I've never been a bride.
There's a bride of Godzilla.
Right, the bride of Frankenstein.
Right.
Who played the bride of Frankenstein?
Who did play the bride of Frankenstein?
Elsa Lanchester.
Okay, and that's why we have.
See, this is why I can't
have you here.
That's why I can't put any more facts into this brain.
Right, it's full.
Chock full.
Chock full.
My Friend Irma, that's part one, called Lucky Couple Contest, starring Marie Wilson, also Kathy Lewis, John Brown in the cast. We'll get back to that in just a few minutes. Let's take a break, and then we'll be right back here on the WGN Radio Theater.
Hey, Carl.
Yeah?
Let me ask you something.
Okay.
Do you need or do you want insurance?
Let me think about this. Insurance, like for my car, for my health?
Your everything, you know, across the board.
Yeah, well, Lisa makes me a little sick sometimes, you know, because she's... she's rough on me. She makes me She gives me...
See, his happy pill has ended. Yeah. It's no longer working.
You know why?
He needs another happy pill.
She beats on me. So I need health insurance because she beats me up.
He's got sores down his
tough.
Body.
Well, did you see? She works out.
Yeah, I'm really... Aren't I tough?
Lisa's tough. Right? I need health insurance because of Lisa, because she's always beating me up. And I need car insurance because I do drive. What other insurance are you talking about?
any kind of insurance.
You have a good insurance
guy
for me?
So Ryan Messner.
Ryan.
State Farm. He's
I've
a State Farm agent.
Yep.
Yes,
Long Grove, right?
He's the coolest cat in town from Long Grove.
Yep, I knew it.
Stationed in Long Grove.
Yes.
He's a great agent, a guy you can trust.
And it's State Farm.
Yes.
All right, so how do we reach him? He's got a website?
Just Google him.
Just Google
Ryan Messner, State Farm agent.
All right, if you need insurance, he's the man for you. Very good.
Absolutely, yes.
All right. Lisa, you want to get back to this?
Please.
All right.
Please.
Can I? Can we get back to my friend?
I will allow that. And
right.
Hey, your happy pill. You need another dose.
January 12th, 1948, lucky couple contest with Marie Wilson. Here's the conclusion to My Friend Irma.
I want to be a bride because that's all a girl has to look forward to, and I've been looking so long, my two eyes are tired. Oh, shucks, that's 26 words.
Did you actually
I'll make
say
it just one eye.
Did you say that?
Now, let's see. I want to be a bride. I want to be a bride. Hello, honey. I want to be a bride.
I want to be one, too, but I don't use up all this paper. Irma, what have you done to my stationery? What are you doing?
Oh, Jean, did you ever hear of a program called Lucky Couple?
Yeah. Yeah, you mean the one in which you write in why you want to be a bride in 25 words, and if you're the lucky couple, they furnish your home for you?
Yes, and, oh, Jean, I'm not good at it. Would you write the letter for me?
Well, honey, do you really think if Al got all those things, he'd marry you?
Of course.
You know, it would be very interesting to find out what Al would do if his back were against the wall. Okay, sweetie, all right, I'll write your letter for you.
Oh, Jane, no girl ever had a better friend.
Huh.
And I'll get Al in the mood by making him a wonderful dinner tonight.
Well, Irma, I know the way to a man's heart is through his stomach, but are you sure you know the road? I mean, well, you know, you very seldom cook.
Oh, I know, but I think this is a time to start, and I've been memorizing a recipe. I'm going to the store right now.
To buy what?
The white of an egg. The ones we have here, they won't do. They all have a yellow center.
The three of us have just finished the first dinner Irma ever cooked, and I must say I am positively speechless. Not only did Irma look adorable, but she made a dinner that was fit for a king, and Al ate it like a king. King Henry VIII. He kept throwing bones all over the place. But I must hand it to Irma, not only was her food delicious, but it carried a message you could not escape. The mashed potatoes were shaped like a heart, pierced by an arrow of paprika. The rice, of course, hinted at a wedding. Then there was a half an avocado with a radish in it. This was the baby in its cradle. Which, incidentally, Irma kept rocking all through the meal. And then in front of a short lighted candle, Irma had placed a black olive cut in two with the pit removed. This could only represent Al's slippers in front of the fireplace. And then for dessert, she served those cute little Chinese fortune cookies. But she'd removed the original prophecies and replaced them with little slips of paper, which read, "If you don't get married right away, you'll drop dead." Oh, it's a subtle kid, that Irma. But if she can get Al to agree to marry her this way or any other way, it's okay by me. I'll be happy to write the letter if she can get Al to say the word. Honey...
Yes, Jane?
You know, I simply must tell you that was the most delicious dinner I've ever eaten. Right, Al?
Oh, the best.
Oh, thank you, Al. I'm glad to hear you say that because I realize how important cooking is in marriage. You see, married people eat twice as much as single people because there's two of them.
Wait a minute, Irma. Did you invite me to this dinner so I'd propose?
Yes, Al.
Well, chicken, I don't think that's fair of you. I should at least have been given the right to choose my food.
What do you mean, Al?
Well, any guy about to walk the last mile always has the right to pick his own menu.
Oh, Al, how can you say that?
Al, please, for once, don't live up to my expectations.
Ah, chicken, I'm just kidding, yeah? I knew all along what you were up to. I got the hint at dinner when instead of serving the rice, you threw it at me. Chicken, I'd marry you today, only...
Only what?
Well, it's just a question of until...
Until one of your deals comes through? Like pumping up spaghetti and selling it for garden hose?
Yeah. Well, that one happened to peter out. That's why I can't commit myself. See, I'm getting 20 bucks a week from the unemployment office. But how do I know it'll be steady? What with the coming election, these are uncertain times, you know.
But, Al, I want to get married right away. I'm so tired of waiting.
Know how you feel, chicken. But I resent your saying that. Tired of waiting. Now, let me ask you something. How long do you wait for a bus every day?
Oh, about 10 minutes coming and 10 minutes going.
That's 20 minutes a day. 6 days a week, 52 weeks a year. Over a period of the time you've been working, that adds up to a lot of waiting. And, chicken, I think I deserve the same consideration as a bus.
Look, Al, you can stall Irma, but you can't stall me. Now, there's a chance. It may be slim, but it's a chance for you and Irma to win all the things necessary to furnish a home.
Huh?
Well, I'm going to write a letter for Irma in 25 words why she wants to be a bride and send it to the Lucky Couple program.
Can't be done.
Why not?
Well, what would you write about? I mean, naturally, you'd write that Irma wants to be a bride because she's met a nice guy, a man of sterling character, a gentleman, a deep thinker. You know, personally, I don't think you can do me justice in 25 words.
If she does win, would you go through with it?
You know, Jane, if you worked half as hard on Richard as you do on me, you'd have been married 10 years ago.
Look, now, Al, you're the one that Irma wants, and I want to see her happy. Now, what do you say?
Well, putting it like that, there's only one man who can advise me.
Who, Al?
Who else but... Hello, Joe. Al, got a problem. Irma and I are going on a radio program. Huh? No, Joe, not it pays to be ignorant. Now, this is called the Lucky Couple Program, dedicated to making happy marriages. Joe, want to ask you a personal question. What do you think of marriage? Uh-huh. 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 Mm-hmm. You love it, you think it's a wonderful institution, you think it's swell, and it's the best thing... Oh, your wife is sitting on your lap and she sends her regards too. Gotcha, Joe. Goodbye. Man's no help, he's trapped himself.
Well, Al, what do you say?
Okay, you write the letter and I'll go through with it.
Got the letter out. I believe I rewrote it 18 times because every time I tried to describe Al, I was sure it wouldn't go through the mails. So I just kept playing around till I got 25 words that seemed to make a little sense, and I signed Irma's name and I sent it off. Well, you can imagine what Irma's been going through since then. Every morning, Irma's been running downstairs to meet the mailman. She brings him little cookies. Once, I believe, I overheard her asking him if he had any socks that needed darning. Then she comes up and she waits by the phone. Once the phone rang at the same time that the mailman knocked, and it was as close as Irma ever came to doing a split. Well, this has just been going on for days, and I don't think I can take it much longer. Honey.
Yes, Jane.
Look, why don't you just forget about that Lucky Couple program? I'm sure that if you'd won, you would have been notified by now.
Oh, vacuum cleaners, refrigerators, washing machines. No wonder couples don't have many children today. They spend all their time in hardware stores. Oh, maybe that's a milkman with a special. Come in.
Hiya, chicken.
Oh, it's you, Al.
No news today from the program, huh?
No, Al, I guess we're just not the kind of people who get things easy. We can only get them by working for them.
Chicken, don't be vicious. Hey, maybe the letter Jane wrote wasn't good enough. Huh?
Now, listen, Al. I made such a gentleman out of you in that letter, your own family would take you back.
Well, what's the use? Let's not spill milk on each other and cry. Take me to a movie.
Okay, chicken, get your hat.
Hello? Who? Irma Peterson. Yeah, Irma, it's for you.
thanks. Hello? Yes, this is Irma Peterson. Who is this? Lucky Couple Program? I did? Oh, thank you. Oh, Al, they liked the letter. Yes? Oh, sure, we'll come to your studio. And believe me, I'm so happy I'll tell all my friends to eat the dog biscuits you advertise. Oh, I mean, goodbye.
Jacob, we did it. Hey, you know, it'll feel kind of nice being married.
Now, listen, Al, you haven't won yet. You still have to appear on the program and compete with the five other couples, you know.
Five other couples?
Yes, Al, they ask us questions. But I'm not worried. You always know what to do in an emergency. Like the time in the restaurant when you didn't have any money.
Oh, that was... that was nothing.
Well, not everyone would have known how to get amnesia so fast.
Come in.
Hello, Jane.
Hello, Richard. What a pleasant surprise.
Thank you. Hello, Irma. Al?
Hi.
Say, you two look kind of excited.
Oh, Irma and Al are going to be on that Lucky Couple radio program tonight. You know, where the winners receive a house completely furnished?
Oh, yes, I've heard it many times.
I bet if you and Jane went on, you'd win.
Yes, I suppose.
Oh, I know Jane wouldn't mind marrying you. She told me so many times.
Irma.
Well, Jane, you did, and even in your sleep...
Irma, don't you think you better go? You and Al will be late.
Yeah, that's right, chicken. We better hurry. Come on.
We'll listen in.
Gee, Jane, I wish it was television, and then I'd be able to see you, and I wouldn't be nervous.
How's that again? Oh, never mind. The only thing I can say is good luck, honey, and we'll be sitting here pulling for you.
Thanks, Jane.
Come on, chicken. Take my arm, baby. Who knows? Pretty soon, you may be Mrs. Al.
Gee, Al, I wonder how the other couples are making out.
Don't worry about them, chicken. We'll be called into the studio next. Now, we got to make a good impression so we get the most applause.
Well, I'm awful nervous.
Yeah, just control yourself and answer the questions.
What do they usually ask?
Well, they'll ask your age. You say 22.
22.
Then they'll want to know how many children we would like. You say 3 or 4.
3 or 4.
Then they ask you why you picked me to be your husband. Now, here you got to lay it on thick because they like it romantic.
Well, what do I say?
Oh, gooey stuff. Like, I got the habits of Lincoln, the charm of Casanova, the smile of Mona Lisa, and I'm built like an ox.
The charm of Casanova, smile of Mona Lisa, and built like an ox.
You got it?
Got it.
All right, folks, come in the studio. Your interview is next.
Well, ladies and gentlemen, you have just heard our fourth couple, and here are the next contestants. Let's give them a great big hand, huh? That's it. That's fine. Thank you.
Richard, will you turn the radio up a little more? I want to be sure to hear everything.
All right, Jane.
And now, folks, for our next lucky couple. Miss, I see your name is Irma Peterson. Your age?
3 or 4.
What?
I'm just a little nervous.
Well, now, don't be nervous. Just relax. After all, there are only 15 million people listening to you. Now, tell us, when you marry this gentleman at your side, how many children would you like to have?
22. I'm getting everything backwards.
Now, just take your time, miss, because this is the important question.
I think I'm ready for this one.
Good. Now, tell our audience why you selected this young man as the man of your dreams.
Well, he has the smile of an ox, the habits of Casanova, and he's built like Mona Lisa. Oh, what's the matter, Al? Oh, I know I left out Lincoln.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Next contestants, please.
But, mister, don't you want to ask me any more
next
questions?
Next contestants, please.
Oh, poor Irma. Oh, and she tried so hard. Richard, why didn't Al talk? You know, he knows that Irma gets excited. Oh, I'll have an unhappy girl on my hands tonight.
Say, I think I see them coming up the street now.
How do you know it's Irma and Al?
Well, the fellow's walking on the inside.
That's them. Well, I better try and cheer her up some way. Put the radio on, huh? Get some music.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, for our pot of cash feature. If you're home when we call your phone number, all you have to do is answer the phone and we give you $10,000. There goes the wheel. The first name is Irma Peterson, and we're ringing her now.
Irma Peterson? Yes, they're ringing us.
Hello, Jane.
Answer the phone. Answer the phone, Irma. It's a radio show, and they want to give you...
Nothing doing. They made a fool of me once tonight. They won't do it again. I'm going to bed. Good night.
Well, I'm sorry you weren't in, Miss Peterson. Sorry you weren't in.
And you know, even when she is in, there's nobody home. When you're dealing with my friend, Irma. You know, this morning I found Irma placing a bar of Swan soap outside of our window. So I said, honey, why are you leaving that bar of Swan soap out there? And Irma said,
well, every morning a pigeon comes to the window and I want our swan to make friends.
Well, Irma, that's one worry you might as well forget. Swan already has lots of friends. Everyone's familiar with that bright green and white wrapper with the big white swan on it. Sure, because that wrapper tells the ladies they're getting the white floating soap with the exclusive super creamed blend, Swan soap. And as you ladies listening know, it's important to get Swan, because Super Creamed Swan gives you a wonderful new kind of suds for dishes. Suds that protect your hands, leave them lovely to look at, smooth to the touch. Suds that whip up faster in the dishpan for quick dishwashing, and then rinse away so completely with one hot rinse that you don't need to dry your dishes. Yes, Swan Super Creamed Blend saves you time and saves your hands, too. So from now on, float Swan in your dishpan. You'll like Swan's wonderful new kind of suds. Irma, presented by Swan, another fine product of Lever Brothers Company, was produced and directed by Cy Howard, starring Marie Wilson as Irma and Kathy Lewis as Jane. The part of Professor Kropotkin was played by Hans Conried. Frank Bingman speaking.
That is My Friend Irma from January 12, 1948, a show called Lucky Couple Contest, starring Marie Wilson with Kathy Lewis, also in the cast John Brown, and Hans Conried, sponsored by Swan Soap and Spry. I don't think either one of those are around anymore, Lisa.
No, but maybe you could use a little Swan soap.
I think Swan took a swan dive, actually, as heard on CBS. I don't think they're around anymore.
No.
And what's Spry? Sounds pretty...
Sounds energetic.
Very energetic, right? Whatever it is. I don't know what it is, though.
Right, I don't know.